in front of the icon of the Holy Protectress of Russia, the original, which had been stolen in 1904 and was thought to be lost forever, and passed into his spacious living room, closing and locking the door behind him. The room overlooked the Rhine, which snaked into the northern horizon like a large anaconda. He picked up a remote control from the arm of the leather sofa, punched a few buttons, and a large flat-screen TV burst into life on a side wall. Grabbing a bottle of Beluga vodka and a crystal tumbler, he stood in front of the television, pouring himself a generous measure as he waited for the program to begin. It was 3 p.m. in Germany, early to be drinking, but he had a bad feeling he was going to need a glass of vodka, and perhaps a few more, to get through the day. The first indication that his premonition was right was the breaking news banner that scrolled across the bottom of the screen. The next was the sight of Patriarch Alexei III, wearing the traditional white kukulian topped by a gold cross, standing next to Pope John Paul III. The last and final clue were the words of the Patriarch himself, spoken in his native Russian, confirming Orloff's greatest fear, that the two men were aiming to unify the two great churches. He watched in morbid fascination, unable to look away, similar to the way a passerby cannot stop from staring at a bus crash with many casualties. When the program was over, he clicked the screen off, grabbed his glass, and passed through the sliding door onto the veranda. It was cloudy and cool, although Orloff, who had been born in St. Petersburg and often swam in the Baltic until October, didn't bother bringing his jacket. The vodka was making him warm anyway, and he had plenty of it. He took his phone out and made a call. "Hello," Anatoly Garaschenko said without enthusiasm. "Did you see them?" "See who?" "Patriarch Alexei and Pope John Paul III." "No." There were occasions when Orloff got the feeling that his most trusted lieutenant did not share many of his passions. This was one of those times. "I warned them, Anatoly. You know that." Garaschenko grunted some kind of response. "There will be severe consequences." "How severe?" "Very severe. That's why I'm calling." Garaschenko said nothing. Orloff watched one of the barges of the shipping line he had just purchased chug past on its way to Cologne. "The packages are ready?"
"Yes, of course."
"Good. It's time we taught the bastards a lesson they will never forget."
"How do you want to do that? Ever since the Saudis botched things so badly, the whole place is locked up tighter than a drum."
It had only been 6 weeks since a cell of terrorists from Saudi Arabia and Nigeria had tried to kill the Pope and raise St. Peter's Basilica. In the aftermath of the failed attack, an attack that had been blamed on a Saudi prince, but which Orloff had actually sponsored, the Vatican Security Office had set up checkpoints well outside the confines of Vatican City.
"But we have..."
Orloff almost said nuclear weapons, but wisely held his tongue. It was true, though. 2 Chinese-made DH-10 nuclear warheads, which he had acquired in indirect fashion, were waiting to be deployed against the Vatican. And now, with Patriarch Alexei III firmly under Rome's influence, he had no choice but to proceed. There was nothing he could tolerate less than his beloved Orthodox Church under the Pope's thumb.
"Yes, I know, but the checkpoints are over 1 kilometer away from the Basilica."
"Isn't that close enough to flatten the place?"
"No, too far."
The DH-10 was not a strategic weapon, meant to take out cities. It was a tactical nuclear weapon, intended to destroy a specific target without causing widespread damage and radioactive fallout.
"Any ideas?" Orloff asked.
"Yes." He finished the still ample contents of the glass.